I'm Zena.
And I'm Renee.
Welcome to When You Just Want a Glass of Wine, a podcast dedicated to making wine drinking more approachable and inclusive. Join us as we decode the language and unlock the customs of wine drinking. Cheers.
Cheers.
We're recording this episode of When You Just Want a Glass of Wine, live from Beauty Champagne and Sugar Boutique in National Landing, right here on 23rd Street in Crystal City. We're about a 10-minute walk from the metro, and I mentioned that today because we are happy to have here with us our friend Madeline Long, Director of Marketing Communication at National Landing Bid. And the reason we brought her in is because they've been so helpful to have us do this episode today. And I wanted to talk a little bit about how wonderful National Landing is. One of my favorite spots is over at the water park. It's such a nice area.
Love water park.
Yep. And one of my favorite people there, of course, is Rock Hopper and his Queen Mother's Kitchen. I always say it wrong.
Just Queen Mother's Kitchen.
Listen to me saying it completely
the
wrong there.
Fried chicken sandwich.
Oh my God.
That's so good.
Yeah, he was nominated for the Rammy this year, and we got to play and pair champagne, and we actually did one of Rachel's wines and a couple of other things on Fox 5, and it was wonderful. But it's a really great area. They do a lot of events there. You have a lot of food there. I like how you call it a permanent food festival over there. So Madeline, tell us a little bit about National Landing, the bid, and the community.
Oh, I'd love to. I mean, there's so much happening here. It's such an exciting transformation story, really. So just to orient us, National Landing is made up of three distinct neighborhoods, Crystal City, Pentagon City, and Potomac Yard. It's just minutes from D.C., so easy to get to, spans Arlington to Alexandria. And we are at the BID, which is the Business Improvement District, are focused on championing the area and promoting the vitality. And right now it's pretty easy because there's so much to talk about,
so much
going on. And you're a huge part of that as well. I mean, we're such a diverse, exciting food scene. And even in the last, since 2023, we've had 60 new openings in
60?
This area. Yes.
That's amazing.
And so if you haven't been in a while, people come back and they go, wow, this is not what I remember. So I highly recommend visiting.
And it's all walkable. So, yes. I mean, we're up here at 23rd and Fern. You can go down and get to Water Park and everything that's along Crystal Drive. It's a little bit more of a walk to get to Met Park, but there's so much over there. And there's so many activities over there. I think my favorite one, of course, is doing the Winter Festival.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, because, you know, third time winner of the Hot Chocolate
really
Contest.
Really owned that. Yeah,
it's going to be a tough one this year. Anyhow, Madeline, thank you to National Landing. Thank you to you for being here. And we are so excited to continue on with this podcast.
That's great. And I'll just say visit nationallanding.org or follow us on social to learn all about the great events and new restaurant openings happening here.
Do the little start. Yeah. I'm thinking more nervous today than anything else. make Nikki proud today.
Oh, please.
All right. Welcome to this episode of When You Just Want a Glass of Wine. Cheers, everybody.
Cheers.
Cheers, cheers. You know, we got to take a little sip.
Mm.
Mm. Wow. We are so excited to be here. You heard an extra voice there. That is our friend Nikki Nellis, who we'll introduce in a second. But Renee, remind everybody to
please like, follow, subscribe, share it with your friends if you like our podcast, and send it around. Make wine more approachable and accessible, and have a little fun with us.
And follow us on Instagram. We're at When You Just Want a Glass of Wine. Yes. And our website is?
When You Just Want a Glass of Wine.
It's not really complicated.
It's not complicated. Because sometimes you just want a glass of wine.
You just need a glass of wine. You just want a glass of wine. Mm-hmm. All right, here we go, everybody. We are joined today by one of literally most recognized voices in food and wine, especially in our D.C. area, a friend of mine, Nikki Nellis. She is the founder of The List. Are you on it? Is it 21 years so far?
Yeah, it's going to be 22 years in February.
That's amazing. And also the host of Industry Night and Foodie and the Beast, which I've had the honor and privilege of being on several times through a couple of different restaurants, which has been wonderful. She's got a wonderful insider perspective. She's got her finger on the pulse of DMV dining. She kind of knows everybody. We're going to talk about a lot of fun things today. And also, it's Virginia Wine Month, so we're going to be drinking some Virginia wine from Barbersville. We're going to talk about Chefs for Equality, which is at the end of October. We are super, super excited about this episode. I just need another cheer because I'm so happy to be doing this with you.
And I do want to add, if you don't mind me breaking in here, first of all, I feel like I have to come down to your level. Normally, I'm much louder than you are. But this is kind of a collab. So not only am I on your fabulous podcast, but you are on my Industry Night podcast well. So we got a collab going on here, ladies.
This is why we are drinking wine at 1 o'clock on a Thursday.
Nothing wrong with that.
The listeners believe that for sure.
Yeah. Renee, tell us a little bit about this incredible Fiano that Holly brought us from Barbersville.
Oh, this is a perfect wine, I think, to pair with this day because we're talking about the exciting and fun world of food and wine with Nikki. And the Fiano is the first wine that we're going to be drinking. The Fiano is, and I have to read some of the things that Holly wrote.
Oh, because they're so funny.
They're very fun. Yep. Yeah, but she said...
Who's Holly?
Holly Faraci. Sorry, yeah. Holly Faraci, who is the National Sales Director and Sommelier at Barbersville. And she was formerly with...
She's formerly with Winebow, formerly with RNDC. I've known her for a long time. So she started as our wine rep, and now she is at Barbersville, and she creates wonderful visits and wonderful dinners and helps us get wonderful wines for events like this.
Okay. Yes, and she's fabulous. Also been a great mentor to me in my WSET training.
Yeah, because she's a WSET level 4 diploma.
So the Fiano is a wildly underrated and impresses without trying too hard. If Sauvignon and Chardonnay are the loud personalities at the party, Fiano is the one in the leather jacket.
I love that.
Subtle, complex, and unforgettable. It's fantastic. And it was, as she says, once beloved by Roman bees and reborn in Campania's volcanic hills. Fiano now flourishes at Barbersville Vineyard under the care of Piedmontese Luca Paschina. And if you've not met Luca, it's too bad for you. Yeah, yes. You need to get down to Barbersville and meet them. This is a fantastic wine.
Oh my gosh, I get right away, you get that citrus peel. I mean, that's one of the things that I get out of it is always citrus peel, but citrus peel. A little bit of that stone fruit. And you know, Holly was walking us through that kind of almonds and hazelnuts and nut thing. So now that she's talking about it, I could really get it. And it has such acid to it.
Absolutely. And it's a wine if you're trying to pair, because you have a lot of people at a party or a lot of people at a dinner table and they like different things. Some people like Sauvignon Blanc. Some people like Chardonnay. Some people like red wine. This is a wine that can actually appeal to a lot of those different groups.
Yeah. We had it for our Bayesa Wine Club. And also, what's really interesting about this wine is Barbersville is the only... As of right now, because another winery is actually going to start growing it, but Barbersville is one of the only wineries in the DMV area to be growing it, I believe, because it is not an easy grape to grow. So we love it. It's delicious. It's just crisp. And we thought it was a wonderful way to start our day. So, Nikki, are you ready for this?
I am. I'm so ready for this.
Well, so let's just start with kind of the thing we like to talk about. What was your aha moment of wine? What was the glass that made you think, oh, I get it. I could keep doing this.
Well, you know, it was my aha moment about bad wine before my aha moment about good wine.
That's what I love
about Nikki. That's what works.
So, you know, in college, you know, we used to buy that. Oh, God, it was that pink, syrupy, white Zinfandel.
Oh, yes. Oh.
Do you know what I mean?
It still exists, I believe.
Yes, no, I know it still exists. And so I remember drinking that and then getting sick from that because it's nothing but sugar, right?
And the hangovers from that.
But in that point, I mean, I grew up, listen, my parents were not huge drinkers, and my dad would have, like, a glass of Chablis at dinner. My mom would...
Mom and dad were the Chablis people too.
They drank Chablis, and but they were not huge drinkers at all. Like, they didn't even have a bar. So it wasn't really until but I was very fortunate. I mean, I traveled to Italy and London when I was young, and so I had the ability to try things, went to wineries and things of that nature. So I was able to get a palate, not because I was drinking a lot of things, but because I was exposed. You know, we ate at wonderful restaurants. I was privileged and put in front of a lot of amazing things. So I would probably say during college, my junior year, I was with a very fast crowd and I was having a lot of fun with that fast crowd, and they were ordering wine and they were ordering lots and lots of wine.
Okay.
And that is definitely where my palate was expanded, and when I realized that was my drink of choice
was wine.
Oh yeah, I mean, and bubbles, obviously. Yeah. Bubbles are the easier choice to go with. I am not a huge cocktail person. I drink them because I have to for work, but you'd be hard pressed for me to order a cocktail.
And I got to say, I love how you said my parents didn't have a bar, because my house in New York, it's the same house that I grew up in, and it has a bar.
Okay.
So it was kind of like the thing at the time to have that like bar downstairs or wherever it was in your. Mm-hmm. And I think my parents owned bars, and I think growing up, I didn't realize that I had this. You know, I was shown all these wines and drinks. It was part of the life that we had. So when I I was used to drinking like that, and I was mm-hmm. also traveled, so it became just something that I came, as opposed to going into college and being like, oh yeah, there's booze,
you know? Right. No, yeah. I grew up in an area and with people who appreciated
yes
value. And actually, I will tell you, it's really funny, my grandparents are from Scranton, okay. Pennsylvania, yeah. and my grandfather worked for IBM in upstate New York. So he used to get sort of ribbed all the time because he was like, upstate New York has really good wines. And everybody was like, sure, Jack, right. But I mean, now.
Yes, it does.
He was right.
He is not.
Upstate New York does have really good wines.
And I'm from Long Island, and we've done an episode on Long Island wines, and they are jamming. I mean, 70s, 80s, 90s, not so much. And so also, if you hear a little coughing, my lovely partner in wine, Renee, has a little bit of an allergy today.
Renee.
So this is just part of our everyday life where we kind of go on with this. So I think I had that during the Chardonnay episode.
Yeah.
Now it's your turn.
Yeah. Nothing is perfect.
No, no. It's live.
Yeah.
So, Nikki, so I'm curious, like, what's a wine that surprised you recently when you have a lot of things? Like, I always like that experience with wine where you're like, oh, I wasn't expecting that.
Let me think about that. Listen, a lot of people pour a lot of wine for me. You know, on a regular day, I want a glass of Sancerre. You know, in the warmer weather when it's right. Anything from Mount Etna for me, like Bianco or Rosso, is absolutely my favorite. And I'm a totally rosé girl. So there is.
She could be my spirit animal.
Yes, right?
Oh, right?
Totally aligned.
Similar palettes, yeah.
I love rosé, specifically Provençal. So every now and again, somebody will pour me, let's go back to champagne, because I also love champagne and sparkling wine. But, you know, Cava and Prosecco have kind of, you know, been overproduced. And for the U.S. markets, they're really sweet. So I really have sort of peeled away from them. But lately, I've been poured several Proseccos that are super dry and really beautiful. I mean, obviously from Italy. Because, you know, my initial sort of, I'm like, Prosecco, like high sugar. Like, that's where my head goes. Yep. But they're not. They're really dry. They're really lovely. So that lately has been my biggest surprise.
Well, Barbersville Prosecco is our by the glass here. I like to call it my house one. It's just, obviously, because in order for it to be called Prosecco, like champagne or anything else, or Cava, Prosecco has to come from Italy. Cava has to come from Spain. Champagne has to come from France and the Champagne region. But yeah, the Barbersville is really dry. And we serve a Cava here that's a Brunatura, so it has no added sugar. And that's the kind of thing that you would want to look for if you're drinking those.
Is it the Cava or the Drapier?
The Drapier, which is a Brunatura, which we love. It's a geek champagne. It's bone dry.
Okay.
But the Cava that we have here by the glass,
oh, that's right.
The Masia Salat, is also that. So if that's something that you like, you don't want that sugar to it, you want to ask them kind of where it's at on the scale. So if it's a Brunatura, it means no added, and then you know you're getting more of that, like, lemon. You see me in my citrus, right? Lemon peel and those pretty flavors. But I agree with you. When I opened the wine bar, I thought people are going to think Cava and Prosecco, it's sweet. I don't like sweet wines. And we went for the dry, because that's what the crowd here really tends to like.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah. So, Renee, I think there's another good question going on over here. What is one of the most kind of memorable settings where you've had a glass of wine? Like, is there something where you really remember, I don't know, it was a dinner or it was, I don't know, it was romantic or it was something with friends or just something where the setting and the whole thing kind of fell into place?
I mean, I wish I could just think of one particular moment, but wine has just been such an incredible part of my profession and my passion. So, you know, being able to sit here with you two, for example, and talk about wine and talk about food and talk about restaurants, like, this is my dream life, right? This I'm living my dream.
Love it too.
You know, like,
absolutely.
Being able to take your passion and make a living from it is the dream, right? Because not everybody gets to do that. So I thought about it, and I really can't think of a single moment where wine was the addition or the experience was enhanced by it, because it's always a part of it. And I feel, I mean, again, talk about privilege. I'm so fortunate because people want me to taste their stuff. Wait, am I allowed to swear on the show?
Sure.
Do we swear? Okay. So, you know,
Renee's so happy because I finally said yes to that question.
Okay. I mean, I love that people want to hear what I think.
Yeah.
I mean, really, people want my opinion and I'm like, I am delighted to give it to you. But I mean, I am not an expert. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm definitely sitting with two people who have way more knowledge about wine, but I love being able to talk about it and be open about it. And it is an addition to every experience.
Yeah.
So I can't just give you one.
I think that's fair.
It's been a part of so many things.
No, that's a great answer. And I think one of the things that when we talk about wine and kind of what we're doing with this, mm-hmm. is that wine brings people together. And so it's, like you said, it's integrated into great dinners. It's integrated into great celebrations. You know, you have anything that great happens in your life and you open up a bottle of champagne to celebrate, or you open up a lovely wine with a dinner or something like that. And you're right. It's like, it's completely integrated into all of the stories that we tell. And that's what I love about the wine is the stories. Yep. I love the storytelling.
Well, that's why we kind of started this podcast. Well, that and To Meet Pink, but that comes later.
I know. But, you know, I will also tell you, like, even on Foodie and the Beast, which we do, you know, I'm going to plug it. It's on every Saturday. I mean, we record it on Saturdays. It's on every Sunday from 11 to noon. We have somebody pouring something on every show. Throughout the show, as Zena knows, because she's been there and she's done it.
So much fun, especially the cocktail ones.
Well, the cocktails are great, but you know, we've had, I mean, Luca's been on the show. I mean, we've had everybody come in, people from all around the world. And learning about wine that way is so amazing because, you know, you both have mentioned Chardonnay several times since mm-hmm. the beginning of the show. And a Chardonnay from California, a Chardonnay from Virginia, a Chardonnay from France, we are talking entirely different living organisms, right? We're talking totally different beings. So what you're drinking, and where in California,
and where in France,
right? So to me, every time somebody comes in and pours something on the show, I really always have to check my biases because you never know what it's going to be.
Well,
you know what I mean?
It's a great, it's a sense of place. And I think that's why like the wine nerds always love Virginia Madsen's monologue in Sideways when she talks about wine and how it changes on a day-to-day basis and everything changes. And yeah, you have to. I mean, I had that. We just talked about that in the Riesling episode, that when I was first asked about a Riesling, I said, I don't like Riesling. And she said, let me show you some things.
Well, you know, we got some stories about that. But
I really want to get into Riesling so early in the show. I feel like I should be drinking more before we talk Riesling. Right,
we'll put that to the side. But I was going to say, I will blow your mind with one of our favorite Chardonnays. So as I was mentioning, I'm from Long Island and Bedell Cellars is there. And it's pretty well known. I believe they've actually served at the White House before. And they do a Chardonnay called coquillage, which means shell in French. Mm-hmm. And what they do is they take the shells from the Peconic Bay and they wash the wine with the shells, and then the shells stay in the stainless steel tank.
Wait, explain to me what, when
it basically kind of gets
put
into
the shells.
Yeah. And then they
put
it in.
With the wine first, and then they put it in the, yeah.
That is really cool. Yeah.
So when
it's
you're
really
drinking cool. it reminds me of drinking a Chablis in France. It reminds me.
So is there like a little salt finish?
Exactly. Yeah. So it reminds me, I used to,
like a
really my
good
parents
Albarino.
Were French teacher, mm-hmm. yeah, teachers, and we used to spend our summers in France, and that's what it reminds me of. It reminded me when I drink it of like swimming over the oyster beds. I mean, yeah, I was very lucky that my parents were teachers back then, and we could do these kind of things. But it blows your mind. So it's a Chardonnay stainless tank with seashells from Long Island. And it's delicious.
I cannot wait to try
it.
That's that. Yep. You are selling it. Selling it.
I got a bottle for you over here.
Are you ready for it?
Yeah, you go.
I wanted to kind of transfer to something else because I'm always fascinated by this, particularly with people that are in the industry. Mm-hmm. And I'm sort of peripheral to the industry.
Right.
Would you rather be surprised and delighted by discovering a new place or get that coveted seat at the 3 Michelin star restaurant, or both, depending on the mood?
Mm-hmm. So, in your little Get Ready For Me document, which I so appreciated because I do not supply that to my guests at all. So I do appreciate your thoroughness,
Thank you.
Michelin pops up a lot. And it's really interesting. I do a lot of work with Michelin. I think what they do for the food community, what they've done for DC here is incredible. There are restaurants that were not doing well, and Michelin put them on the map in a different way. But I don't seek out Michelin as a meal to eat. Yep. If it happens to be a meal at a Michelin restaurant, that's amazing. I trust the guide. I totally trust the guide. Although I do think some of their choices in the DC area could be discussed a little heavier. But they have what they like. Michelin loves a tasting menu. They love one, you know, and they love one with wine pairings. Like, they're very specific about things that they really like. I don't think that way when it comes to eating. So I'm just as happy going around the corner to one of our neighborhood restaurants, which, you know, I'm just going to get the wedge and a steak because that's what I feel like eating. That's a good meal. Mm-hmm. As I am like being in like one of the hottest restaurants right now. And so, yes, I do want both. And I think everybody should have that experience. Nobody should be afraid of the hottest restaurant right now and not being able to get in and having an amazing experience there, as well as going to their neighborhood restaurant where everybody knows your name. I believe in a bit of both.
I love that.
Yeah.
Well, what is one of the favorite of the Michelin stars that you would go kind of more than once, right? Because there's a lot of fabulous ones that are really like a one time. But is there one that's a Michelin star
locally
that you love?
Or internationally? Because like, honestly, to me, when I'm in Italy, well, actually, so a couple years ago, David and I were in Sardinia. Mm-hmm. My husband speaks Italian. So, like, we're going to Italy, right? That's the deal, which I'm not complaining. It's fantastic. So in Porto Cervo, there was this restaurant. It was a Michelin-starred restaurant. And I was like, no. Like, I was so disappointed. It's not that it wasn't good. It just wasn't great. And there was everything felt 10 years old. Like, everything felt like, and meanwhile, our restaurant was we stayed at Petro Sagrada, which is up in San Pantaleo, which is just ridiculous. It's so fabulous. And their restaurant at that time, it got a Michelin star the next year. We went there the next year. And that restaurant was phenomenal. Most of the dining in Sardinia, I mean, it's just really good pasta and seafood.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't have to be Michelin. Like, you could be on a beach, a gorgeous beach, and it looks like there's a shack on the beach. And then you walk into the shack, and the shack has crystal glasses and china and silverware. Right? And they're serving pasta with lobster, and it's friggin' delicious. Yeah. And, you know, you're drinking Vermentino or, you know... What's the other one from Sardinia? Sardinia is Vermentino and...
This one's on you, Renee.
Oh, it begins with an S. It'll come to me.
It'll come to us.
It's not Segreto. It's a...
Sangrentino? No.
Sangrentino.
Yeah. I was like, pull that one out.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Anyway, they're both delicious wines.
Well, speaking of that... Oh, so right. Wait. So we're talking... Is there something here, though, locally, that you're, you know, you think is one of the ones that...
I mean, well, Maidan lost theirs, but I thought they totally deserved it. And I know why Maidan... I mean, you know...
I love Maidan.
Rose would say to me, like... People from Europe would come over and they'd be like, this isn't Michelin star. Mm-hmm. And it is a Michelin star restaurant. The food there is spectacular. The service is amazing, but it's bustling. It's fast. It's furious. It's not a my pleasure moment, right? I think Fabio Cerbocchi's restaurants are great. Mm-hmm. And I love them. And I think Fiola is delicious and beautiful. And if you're looking for a serene experience, then you are absolutely going to get it there. Yeah.
I've only done Fiola Mare. I've never been to Fiola.
Actually. And I'm a Fiola Mare fan.
Yeah.
And I love Del Mar too.
Yeah.
And I like, what's the other one?
Oh,
begins with an S.
The Italian.
Spolina.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're all Italian. well, actually, Del Mar is not Italian. This is so funny. I was down at the wharf a couple weeks ago and I was just walking. It was a jazz festival and there was this couple behind me and they were talking about Del Mar and they were like, I don't understand. The chef is Italian, but it sounds like it's Mallorcan. Mallorcan is anyway, they were talking to each other. And I couldn't help myself. I was like, hi, I'm Nikki Nellis. Can I help you out? I was like, the chef is Italian. His ex-wife is from Mallorca. This is a restaurant because of her, blah, blah, blah. It's Mallorcan, but it's delicious. Go eat there.
Okay, but that's actually, so, but they actually hit on it almost perfectly,
yes.
Right? Without even knowing
but they
all
were confused.
That.
I was like, how can I help you today?
It's like a quintessential perfect DC moment. Right.
And they were
right
probably
like, let me help you with this.
You know, actually, can I tell you one more?
Yeah.
Before the wharf was the wharf, and it was whatever it was.
Right.
There was a Phillips.
The Phillips
seafood. I mean, it was grody, but That whole area.
Oh, I remember
it.
It was just,
it wasn't nice. Anyway, I had to be down there. There was some event. I was judging some competition, and I was getting out of a cab, and I see this older couple, like, getting out of a cab and looking around, and I'm like, can I help you? And they're like, well, our concierge sent us here.
Oh.
We're supposed to go to Phillips. And I was like, okay. I hailed the cab back. I was like, come here. I put them in the cab. I sent them someplace else. I'm like, you are not eating here.
It's not the place.
Okay, that's amazing.
I was like, your concierge is getting a kickback. I'm like, I don't know what's happening here.
But this is not right.
I think I sent them to Hank's. Like, I don't know where I sent them. But I was like,
this is going to blow your mind.
You are not eating here. So anyway.
Oh my God, that's
scary. I just insert myself into people's lives.
I always believe in direction karma because I live in DuPont. So I'm always stopping people to like, are you lost? Do you need help?
I think I have the word concierge tattoo to my forehead because people ask me all the time. And then, of course, I help myself as well.
And then, well, speaking of all this travel, what is one of your both international and domestic, like, foodie destination and wine destination? Like, we just went to, Jimmy and I went last year to Willamette, which, of course, for a wine lover like me,
I would love to go there.
Oh, my.
I've never been.
Oh, you've never been to Willamette. Well, we will talk because we had some of the best tastings. And the very first thing, again, speaking of Chardonnay, I took him to this one little town. We were at the Willamette Valley Vineyard, and he was sitting there, and I ordered the Argan. I ordered a Chard, and he took a sip of it, and he looked at me, and he was never really much of a wine person. Now he is, but, and he took to me, he goes, is this how Chardonnay is supposed to taste?
Oh.
And I went, yep. And by the end of the trip, he was like, I am a cool climate Chardonnay lover that uses neutral oak, and I prefer volcanic soil. And I was like, I love you, because that's just great.
Yes.
So that's like my favorite region. Where do you like, where do you love the most within the U.S. and abroad?
Well, so abroad, I mean, I love Italy.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talked about Mount Etna wines. Mount Etna wines.
I love white that you love those wines.
White and red. You know who introduced me to them first, probably about 15 years ago, was Brent Kroll.
Oh, yeah. That
when Iron Gate opened.
I love Iron Gate.
I know. We were sitting around the fireplace. It was so lovely. And he's like, I got a good wine that I really want you to taste. And it was a Mount Etna red. And it, I just, the ash, you know, the smoothness. It just blew David and I away. I mean, David likes wine, but David's not a drinker. I mean, at all, really. Like, I mean, he'll have a beer, he'll have a glass of wine, he'll maybe have a cocktail, but, like, he doesn't drink. So, which means I hit the rest of the bottle is for me.
driver.
But, right, exactly. You got to have a driver. Very good. So, I mean, Italy in general is definitely, like, as far as the wine tastings that I've had and have done, I feel very fortunate about those, and I love that. But we also did a trip years ago to Santa Rita Hills.
Oh, that's a great wet place.
And I have to be honest, it was just, it wasn't just the wines. You know, I think any of these trips, right? Like, you had an experience with your partner,
right?
Because he had his aha moment, and you were there to share it. So not only were the wines fantastic, but, like, it was this, like, love-in that you guys got to meet at. And when we went to Santa Rita Hills, my son, my eldest son, Jason, was living in L.A., and we went out to visit him with two of the younger kids. The two other kids were still here on the East Coast. And it was my husband and I and the three of us, and we just did this trip, and we went to all the wineries, and the little ones were little, and it just was like this...
It all worked.
...amazing, loving trip, and it was just really great.
Yeah,
see, I don't know. I feel like I can mention so many because, like, we were in Umbria and I brought my mother and we had two of the kids with us and we went to all these vineyards and everybody greeted us and we ate in their homes. And I don't know. Like,
I love
the wine world is so rich and warm and welcoming and they're so eager to share their product with you.
Oh, we,
yes. Yeah, I'm very proud of it and they want it. Yeah. Absolutely. And if you show the slightest bit of interest, like, it always makes me crazy in a tasting room in Virginia when we're out there and you'll see somebody come in and they're so negative about things. And they're at my favorite Glen Manor and a woman came in and she's like, I only like California wines, but by all means, pour. And the owner was like, why are you torturing both of us? Like,
right, why? Leave.
And they're like, we had a bad experience in there. And I'll go in and I'm like, you show the slightest bit of interest to them.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And they're like, we have these reserve wines. Mm-hmm. And then it's you now you're 15 wines in and you're getting a membership in the club and everything. And I'm like, so maybe it's you.
Well, I always tell people the biggest thing, if you really want to look like you know what you're doing, the biggest thing you do is ask for a spit glass. Whether you use it or not is, I tend to, because I often do these. So like when we were out in Willamette.
So should I have asked for a spit glass when I sat down?
To make it look more,
makes you look like you're in industry. Yeah, I think it's like, otherwise you're
They think that there's something about that. So you come in, you don't have that perfume on, right? You come in and you're ready to taste. And I always try to have a little notebook and ask for a spit glass. And that kind of sets it up that you're here to you really taste, and that moves it a little faster. How about tasting these secret hidden
ones?
But I
also think if you're with the right person, that getting that nod.
Yeah.
That we're all on the same page. Whether you're in a restaurant or you're talking to a som, or I come in here, right, and start talking wine with you, and like we start jiving on it, right? Like it feels like you're a part of a secret club.
Yep.
And
absolutely. Yeah, I know what you mean.
I think that's the high people get when they're talking about wine, talking about cocktails, talking about food, talking about restaurants. When they feel like they're a part of it, they get a high. Because they're like, oh, like either they feel accepted or they feel like their opinion matters. I'm not really sure what the serotonin moment is in it, but nothing.
People love being part of a club.
They love it. Yeah. Nothing feels better when you're at a restaurant and you say to the, you know, the som comes over and you start chatting and you're like, well, you know, I don't really know much, but I do know X, Y, Z. And they're like, oh, like, let me get the book. And like, all of a sudden you're both hunched over and you're talking. It leaves you feeling rosy and glowy, and now you're...
It's great.
It's exciting.
Well, I will tell you, speaking of that, I have to insert this story. So I took Jimmy to the Duck and the Peach about 3 years ago for his birthday, and we did the wine and the wine pairing. Mm-hmm. And the som came over, and he started the day with the Steininger Sparkling Sauvignon Blanc, which is one of my absolute favorite wines.
Ooh, okay.
And I went, oh my God, I love these guys. I was just visiting them a few years ago. And this was like 22-ish or so. I was like, I love them. What a great way to start. And the people next to me were kind of like, yeah, sure. You know, and then he came over, and I can't remember what the second bottle was. And I was like, oh, what a great upset. This is wonderful. I'm so happy you're pouring this. And he's chit-chatting. And the people next to us were like, yeah, whatever. And then the third bottle came out, and it was my friend John Lahr and his wife. They're over in Willamette Valley. I haven't seen them for a long time. And their wedding anniversary happens to be on my birthday. And I knew that because they happened to have come in when I used to own the restaurants up in Maryland for their anniversary when they were in the area. And I was like, it's my birthday today. So he pours this, and it's a very, very small winery out of Willamette. And I go, oh my God, John and his wife, this is so wonderful. And the guy is like looking at me because I haven't
said. They must have been like, who are you? Can we come sit with you?
And meanwhile,
are you now best friends with them? Like, I need to know.
It was so funny. And the guy, for the fourth one, he comes out, and it was an after dinner. And he goes, okay, I'm just going to pull something different from our regular lineup. And it was something that I didn't know. And Jimmy noticed that the people next to us were just not engaging at all. Like, if it was me and I heard that, I would have been like, wait, tell me more too, right?
Right.
But the people next to us, he noticed they were just like, didn't even want to hear the story. And I was happy to hear what he had to say about the wines. Like, I knew what I knew, but I wanted to hear what he had to say about the wine. So I was like, you know, tell me why you chose this.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference in the experience was so vivid at that point, because we were jiving, and I was just, I think when you're excited about it, the food or the wine makes them feel like, oh, yay. You know?
Well, right. But those other people, I thought you were going to tell me you were best friends with them. They're coming over for dinner tonight. Those other people, that's not what they're looking for.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, no judgment, a little bit of judgment, but no judgment. Like, not everybody gets excited by it. Mm-hmm. I mean, the three of us sitting here, this excites us.
Yes.
You know, it really,
some
that's
people
why
are just checking boxes. Yeah. Some and people, having experiences. Some people are more reserved, but also I think some people just don't.
They don't care.
And they don't want you to be having a better time than them.
Yeah. Oh, well, that is totally true.
They don't want, and you
they
were definitely
FOMO.
Having
they
the
have
most
such
fun
FOMO.
In the restaurant.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think also that's why people like our wine club, because they're part of this club. And we,
sure.
You know, I think we have, what, 4 dozen people? Because anytime anyone comes in, there's at least one or two people from wine club, and they just like co-opt the whole thing, and then the next people become their best friends. We have dating in wine club, successfully or not. I mean, we have like, you know, husbands and wives and couples and people, and it I think that kind of clubby atmosphere.
Yeah.
And then the more that are here, especially on Fridays, they meet new people. Mm. And then those people are like, well, that's fun. I want to be a part of that too.
Sure.
You know? But all right, I was going to move us a little bit more locally because mm-hmm. we are here in National Landing.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of wonderful restaurants here. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love being a part of it. They have been so wonderful to us. It's just a, I mean, I say I'm a small business. I am a micro business, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of wonderful local restaurants. So I was going to
60,
ask,
right? That's what 60, I heard.
Well, new ones, right? Is that what she said?
New ones in the past.
It's amazing.
2 years.
Wow.
But I was going to lead you, before we talk kind of more local, what, and this made me really think about this question, and a couple of people were like, ask Nikki, I want to know what she thinks.
Okay.
What are one of the, your favorite restaurants that no longer exist in D.C.?
Oh, well, I miss Michelle Richard.
I thought you were going to say Citronelle or Marcel's.
Yeah, no, not Marcel's.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Marcel's. It was a very good restaurant. And actually, I totally just ran into Robert Wiedemeyer when I was in Chestertown 2 weeks ago.
Okay, that's funny.
So strange. him and Polly. And listen, Marcel's had its place and yeah. I had a lot of good times there. But when I say Michelle Richard, I mean Michelle Richard, the yeah. chef, more than Citronelle, because I love Central when he, you know, when he was still overseeing it. I love the joy that he brought.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also really miss Galileo. I know Roberto Donna is still cooking,
yeah,
and he's still an amazing chef, but Galileo was like my first like insane restaurant.
I agree.
When I first moved to DC in 91.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, they all had so much swagger back then in such a different way.
That was,
I mean,
a place.
That was mm-hmm. a total place. I don't know if you remember, but this was later on. I was already in the industry, but he used to do this sandwich club.
Oh, so yes, I do know.
He would open up the Laboratorio in the back, and he would do sandwiches on... you know, like rando, like there was no Twitter. There was no like social media. I don't even know how we knew about it. And it was like cash only. It was a Roberto Donna sandwich, it was like $6.
Yeah.
And he just had like, I mean, this is why I got so much trouble, but he would have like a shoebox and people would put like 10 in and take cash out or like whatever. But like, it was just cash.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, I mean, you know, Chef Fuvin, I mean, the Vidalia, there was some good restaurants. One of the things I really, it makes me sit up straight is when people sort of say like, oh, well, DC has such a good dining scene now.
Oh.
And I'm sure Ada, who's filming this, has heard this 1,000 times from me.
He's shaking his head.
DC, if you go back 35, 40 years ago, DC had an incredible dining scene, but it had an incredible dining scene for the size of DC. There was no Wharf, there was no Navy Yard, mm-hmm. there was no, Columbia Heights, there was no
Petworth.
Shaw. I mean, right? There was no Petworth, there was no National Landing.
Yeah.
I mean, there was no, our footprint from a real estate perspective has changed drastically in the last 40 years, not to mention the influx of people who have come in to fill in that real estate.
Yeah.
So you need restaurants to cater to all those people.
That's a really good point.
So, we did not have the breadth and depth of restaurants that we have now. But Jean-Louis, Michel, Roberto, Robert.
Didn't they all have that card game at night, too, or something?
No, so that was called Chef's Club. They did it once a month.
Uh-huh.
And I actually got invited to one.
Oh, wow.
So when I first started the list, areyouonit.com, well, it had not started yet. I was taking cooking classes at Roberto Donna's Laboratorio. And I was baking for area restaurants out of my house, which was highly illegal, but nobody seemed to care. So I was taking classes with him. And I mean, you literally found out about those classes via either snail mail. Or you missed it. And so, I mean, they were not using email as a way to communicate. So I would go in and take these classes, and we wound up being like, you talk about your club, like this core group of us. And oh my God, I don't want to go off as a tangent on the classes, but they were phenomenal. And he would say to me, oh, my friend Michelle's doing a class. You should go do one of his classes. Or so-and-so is doing a dinner. You should go to that dinner. And I was like, how do I find out? out about this stuff. So that's where the list came from. It was because of Roberto Donna. And after I got my sexy website all done and I had a blast system, thanks to my husband, because this is before any of those things were easy,
right,
20 plus years ago, vlogs did not exist. I went to him with, like, I didn't even have a laptop because, I mean, I pulled it up on his computer thinking he would advertise. Uh-huh. And he was like, yes, I will advertise, but I am not, you are not going to take money from me. I was like, oh, why not? And he was like, my being on your site as an ad is good for you, which he was right. And he also invited me to the Chef's Club. So the Chef Club was once a month. They did it at a house of one of the chefs. It was on a Saturday night after service. So it was like midnight.
Right.
And they were all cooking and drinking and stuff like that. And they all brought people with them who were doing different things in the industry. That's where Jodi Lehrer and I connected for the first time from Santa Lucia Estates. And I met all of them in one shot.
Wow.
I met absolutely all of them in one shot. And
that's amazing.
It was incredible. Jeff Boobin was like, what do you want? You want money? And I was like, no, I don't want money. I just, I didn't know how it worked. Mm-hmm. So they introduced me to their PR people. They introduced me to their managers. They introduced me to everybody. I literally took everybody in town out for coffee or, you know, sat in the restaurant and just listened. And that was how I networked and met everybody.
That's fantastic.
Well, thanks to you, I met Michelle Richard at one of the Chefs for Equality, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And I think it was only about a year or two before he passed. Davis brought him over, and I had a picture of him in a cap. And I had never met him, and I had never gone to Citronelle for this one reason, because everybody told me how wonderful it was, and 90% of the time people had this wonderful experience, and then there were a few times when people didn't, and I had this, from afar, crazy respect from him that I didn't want to go without really knowing anyone. I didn't have a lot of money at that time. Mm. And I was so scared that I wasn't going to have the experience that everybody else had, that I would lose this kind of fascination with him. And then it was too late. Mm. And so I tell everybody all the time, it makes me cry.
Honestly, worst comes to worst. I mean, I know it's money.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong.
Then I had none of it. So,
right. Yeah. I like my money too. But
Worst comes to the worst,
it doesn't meet your expectations.
Well, I've learned that over the years. You know,
right.
You tamper your expectation. I tell people all the time, you're going someplace fabulous to eat or drink, go on a Tuesday just because it's Tuesday. You don't have to go for your 20th wedding anniversary.
On Saturday night.
Yeah, on Saturday night or your 50th birthday. Go on a Tuesday to the place that you really want to go to, because then it'll be something even more special, because your expectations on a Tuesday are really not that high, and they're not that crowded. And you're more likely to have time to engage, pick your wines, eat your meals, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Where are we going with this, Renee?
We are going to go into, I want to ask you about, I have a question later about what makes a great local spot. Mm-hmm. The Cheers, we talked about that earlier, when everybody knows your name. And part of that, what our goal at the podcast is to make wines more approachable. And we had a little conversation before we started recording about what makes that happen and what can throw up a roadblock on that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have some experiences with that that you would like to share?
Yes.
You know, and so we'll talk about the wine that I am pouring.
Oh, yes.
Later, because we'll get to that. But I am going to pour us, because I think with this conversation, we may need a little bit of wine. So I am going to pour the Barbersville Nebbiolo, which we will introduce after this wonderful story. But I think for these stories, we might need some wine.
Yes. And this is one of my favorites. I love this wine.
Oh, this is Nebbiolo.
Fantastic wine.
We are such big fans of Barbersville. Mm, so I didn't mean to interrupt, but liquid fun.
Talking about making wine more approachable. What, as somebody that's focused in the industry, that works with a lot of industry professionals, this amazing story that you just told, what are some tips that you can give them on how to make that happen?
Well,
or block it?
So here's the thing. You guys always talk about making wine more approachable. And you hear that is like a drumbeat, right? Wine should be approachable. Wine should be approachable. Wine should be approachable. I echo that. It's a liquid. I mean, it is an agriculture, right?
Ray Isle says, it's fermented grapes.
Yes.
Let's calm down.
Let's keep it in perspective. I mean, yes, somebody put their blood, sweat, and tears into making the product, and it's not easy to do.
And that should be respected.
Right. And we've seen lots of people fail, lots of people be successful. So, I mean, all due respect to the final product, but it is wine. And it does take an immense amount of knowledge, obviously, with your WSET and what you're doing there, to know it and taste it and love it. I am not an expert. I do not pretend to be an expert. I do cover the industry and those who pour it. That is true. No criticisms to them. But for some reason, there are a lot of male wine professionals that are very put off when it comes to my opinion about Riesling. Psalms in general. They love their Riesling.
They do.
Y'all love it. You love it. And I, good for you. But when I say I prefer not to have a Riesling, it's like a gauntlet thrown. I just don't get it.
Just don't give them something else.
So as we discussed before the show, if somebody said to me, Nick, I hear you don't like it. You're right. It can have a sugar residue sometimes, but there are plenty of good ones out there. I'd love to pour you one. I'd be like, sure. But I still want my Sancerre or my Bianco or whatever it is. And if that was respected, I'd be like, oh, well, that wasn't a bad experience. But I have been challenged
that word, right?
About my opinion, my taste. If you come to me and say, well, tell me what you like, and I tell you what I like and what I don't like, and then you're like, yeah, you're wrong. That is not approachable.
No.
Quick story with Riesling. I don't know which one to tell first because I have so many. My favorite one is when a wine professional was so offended that I told him I did not like Riesling, that he poured, he did not bring me the wine I ordered, which was a funky orange one, by the way. Because I have, I'm totally open to
it's
trying
not like you're
wine.
Asking for a big brand mass market box
I'm
wine.
I'm not asking for Yellowtail for, I mean, no judgment if you like that stuff. But, you know, I'm not asking, well, I'm just telling you what I like and don't like. Anyway, he brought over several glasses, put them down in front of me, and was like, you tell me which one is a Riesling.
I would just be so annoyed. I'd be like, the one that smells like petrol.
I should have just gotten up and left. Yeah. But there is another one, and I'm not going to say his name on air, but you know him very well, who used to just pour me whatever he wanted. And I'd be like, you know, I want X. And he would just pour me something else. And he'd be like, do you like it? And I'd be like, it's a Riesling, right? And he's like, see, I told you. And then he was actually on Foodie and the Beast once. He was opening up a new restaurant. And he's like, you know, everybody makes wine so hard. Like, he was just going on. He's like, everybody makes wine so hard. Like, it's wine, like, just like you said, right? He's like, I mean, it should be approachable.
Oh.
And I literally said, right. Like, so if somebody orders a glass of Sancerre, you're not going to pour them a Riesling just because you want to prove them wrong, right? And he was like, oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a dick move, right? That's a dick move. I'm like, it's a total dick move.
And you, by the way.
You could be a dick.
You did it.
So anyway. So, I mean, I don't know what it is. I think if wine professionals or food professionals, like, we are talking about wine and food. We have the luxury to talk about it in the way that we do and to enjoy it the way we do. Yeah. And not to keep that. I hate to use the word gratitude because it's the wrong word, but like not keeping that, like, we're so lucky and fortunate that we get to sit here and talk about food and talk about wine and love it so much when there are people who need it in a different way. I mean, to lose that point, you shouldn't be in the business anymore.
Yeah. No. And I think it's a great, I love that story because, like, you have the example of we're at a local place, a tiny place, and it was a new chef, she's really trying to make her name, and I have like wimpy taste buds, so like spice, like chilies for me, I can't do it. And I said, can I just get that jalapeno aioli on the side?
Mm-hmm.
I'll ask for it. No, refuse to make any changes the whole time. So I'm like, I just stopped ordering food there, and then I stopped going. Yeah. And all I kept thinking was, there's the interview clip with Jacques Pepin where they said, if somebody ordered a steak well done, what would you do?
Oh, yeah.
He said, I would cook it well done. That's what they want. He said, now I might tell them it's going to taste different than how I would prepare it normally. But he's like, I'm not going to argue with them. That's what they want. He goes, they're the customer. He goes, I'm in the hospitality business and the service business.
Mm.
And that maybe that's how they grew up. That's their sense memory. That's what they want. That's what
I'm
doing.
I had to learn that lesson.
And I'm like, if Jacques Pepin can do it, lady, you're no Jacques Pepin.
Right.
Was what I would have said.
So it's really interesting. You bring up a really interesting point, and I'm with you. I'm with you 99%.
Yep.
There's a restaurant in Philadelphia, James Beard Award-winning restaurant, Kalaya.
Thai. I love that restaurant.
The restaurant is amazing, and she's a character, and she's brilliant and fabulous.
I went with my friend Wendy Gordon's son, Mike. Mm-hmm. It was so good.
It's one on somebody
it's
feet
so
fill.
Good. It's in Fishtown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And but here's the thing. Food is really spicy.
It is spicy. Yeah.
Now, my mother doesn't like spice. So now our server, if you read the website.
A sweet Riesling would go really good with that, you know.
I'm sure you're right. If you read the website does come across as aggressive. Like, the food is spicy. You don't like it. Don't come here. I mean, it really does say that. And my mother doesn't like spicy, but she's been there lots of times. But when we got there, our server, here's where the switch is.
Yeah.
Our server was so lovely. I was like, the three of us love spice. This one does not. We'd like to do a mix. She was like, I got you. Now, they weren't going to change the dishes to accommodate my mother, but they were going to make sure that there was food on the table.
Absolutely.
So that she could enjoy the meal as well. And I mean, we had a just amazing, amazing experience.
Yeah,
But to your point, right? Like, there's a way for them to accommodate you without making you feel like, now that you don't go,
and it's
like that.
But it's also, I think the thing, the difference is like, and I go to restaurants like that. I know because I do my research because I'm a nerd lawyer. And I'm like, all right, they're not going to change anything. I'm like, that's fine. I'll just ask for like this on the, or I'll ask for, you know, I'll need a lot of water or rice, a lot of rice. Or I'm like, I would like a very large rajita, please. I know how to accommodate on things like that. I just thought, I'm like, it's a shrimp taco. Like, we're not at a five star, like it's a,
Why are you sticking your heels
why
in
are
on
this so,
this?
Why is this so? Why is this a thing? And it was like, no. And we're like, okay. Well, then we're not going to get it. And so.
And there's no hospitality in that.
There's
you're
no 100% hospitality in that.
Right.
It's like, you know what I mean? And I'm like, I'm not saying I want you to change up the complete menu. I'm just saying it's a side. Sauce that's on the. Can you just put it on the side?
Right. Because you're not mixing it in.
And it's recognize, it's a top sauce. I've worked in restaurants. I know that when you have like one change in a busy restaurant, it can like throw everything off. This was not a busy restaurant. This was not a thing like that.
Plus, it's a sauce that normally goes on the top. You're not actually cooking with the sauce, like, where they're like, well, it's already pre-made. It's in the coleslaw.
But I've done it in other places, and then it came out with like, it was covered in jalapenos. And I was like, okay, that's actually worse. Because I'm like, well,
and now I'm not eating this.
I'm not going to eat any of it, because like a single jalapeno seed can ruin an entire bowl of food.
And you know, if I can just say, you know, I always sort of say to people, you know, a restaurant is a business, and they are not trying to give you a bad experience, you know. And but what you just described as a bad experience, that's not what they want.
No.
They want a return customer. So, like, I want to go in there with a microphone and be like, "Excuse me, can we talk about the process here? What's happening? Like,
why?
Do you know what I'm saying?
Why are you dying on that hill?
Right, on the sauce and on the side.
And that was a place that was like very much like a Cheers for us. That a bunch of people came, and there was like this big shift, and it went completely away from it. And we're like, oh, okay, you know, we'll find the new Cheers. Which is what brings me, like, what is that for you in a restaurant? For you, is it something that, do you want to like nerd out about wine or nerd out about food, or do you want to just sometimes sit and have, like you said, you're a wedge in a steak?
Well, so Bucks Fishing and Camping is down the street from my house. And what I love about Bucks is, first of all, I love the vibe.
Is it the chef James? Is that the chef?
Well, James Elefantis is the owner. I have no idea who's cooking there. It was a Carol Greenwood restaurant. They were partners initially. She's long gone.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And James is not the chef. But what I love about it is it's a bunch of neighborhood kids who are servers primarily, I mean, except for management. And, you know, you could go on a Saturday night with friends and have an elevated experience. Or you can go on a...
I didn't mean to interrupt. They did a Gabrielle Hamilton book signing there.
Oh, did they really?
A zillion years ago, next to, good Lord, that same day, I think Madeleine Albright was signing
At the Politics and Prose.
Politics and Prose. I think that was the two book signings. This is so DC.
It's so DC.
I didn't mean to interrupt,
DC.
But I just like popped to the top.
No,
of my head.
But anyway, so I mean, they have very good wine there.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And everything about it is just. You know, it's not my favorite restaurant. I have lots of favorite restaurants. What do you like? I love when people are like, well, actually, when people say to me, what's your favorite restaurant? I'm always like, you don't really want to know my favorite restaurant. What you want to do is tell me about your restaurant experience. So I'm always like, what do you like?
Yeah.
Because that's what they really want. They want to tell me where they're eating and what they're doing. And I am delighted to take that in. We go to Bucks as a neighborhood space. But honestly, because of my job and because of what I do, I don't get to do as much repeat business as I would like.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because
especially now, there's so many places opening.
And I have to go to all of them.
Yeah.
for my work. So, and that is not a complaint.
No.
But I don't get to do as much repeat business.
There's only so many meals in a week.
There's so many meals in a week. And I cook and I'm home and I don't want to go out every night of the week. So I am judicious, but I do have to hit them all.
Well, I was going to move us to a different time of day because I have a couple of reasons for this. We're going to move over towards brunch.
Oh, okay.
You know, here in National Landing, Surreal starts at brunch. We do our annual meeting every March over there. Oh, not our annual meeting. Sorry. It's a Women's Day get-together over at Surreal. They have an incredible brunch over there. Do you have a go-to brunch wine, or are you like a mimosa person, or what do you do for brunch?
So I'm not a mimosa person. Mm-hmm. I don't need orange juice in my bubbles. Just give me really good champagne. You know, it's funny. We don't do a lot of brunch.
No.
Like, I do brunch in my house. Like, I love doing a brunch and having people over because we do the show on Saturdays. I don't know. Like, our weekends, we go out on Saturday nights a lot, or Friday and Saturday nights. So brunch is the one thing I'll do in my house. I don't go out much for, but I'm definitely a Shan. I'm going to be drinking champagne, or I'm going to be drinking that rosé from Provençal.
That's right.
I mean, that is, or the Provençal rosé, the rosé from Provence. That is, those are definitely my choices.
Well, I've got a rosé for you, and I meant to mention this earlier. There is a wine. So I went to Little Blackbird. Mm. Little Blackbird was up with
us. I love Little Blackbird.
They're so wonderful. And they were up with us for a Rammy Award. Neither of us won for the Wine Program of the Year.
Who won for Wine Program of the Year?
The one up in Mount Pleasant. Not easy wine company.
In Mount Pleasant.
Yeah. They're really wonderful.
Ellie?
No. I'll think of it. I feel so bad that I can't remember it.
Okay.
But I went up there and I went for a date night with Jimmy on a Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And we sat down and I saw this bottle of wine, Palmetto Constanza from Mount Etna. And I texted Andrew, my wine rep, and I go, I need this for wine club.
Okay.
And it was delicious. I brought it in for wine club. It was so good. And then suddenly I found they had a rosé. It has everything that you said you love about the rosés from Mount Etna. Uh-huh. And they had a rosé and it was really expensive by the bottle for wholesale. And I begged. I was like,
what's expensive? Tell me what that means.
Like, my wholesale price was for this rosé was
sparkling rosé?
No, just still.
Flat rosé from Mount Etna.
So your retail price would have been upwards of the kind of like 28 to 32, which is fine, but you know how people are with rosés. And I begged them, like, because they were having a special. I was like, I've been working with you guys for 15 years. Can you please give me this rosé at the better price? And they did. They were like, we'll give you one case. So you're going to get a bottle of that when you leave.
Oh, my God.
Because I love it. And to me, the flavor of that is actually, I always say, mandarin orange. It's a very distinctive. And that mandarin orange reminds me of Campari, and it reminds me of Italy.
Mm.
And so you're going to have a bottle of that.
I know. I have to leave with, like, a list today of all the wines I need to taste, and I'm just going to turn it around on the two of you for just a second because I know you have a show to end.
Oh, why is that?
Sorry, can you stop that?
Okay, so you're turning it back on us.
I am turning it back on you. You're talking about this wine club.
Oh,
so can I get like a little 411 on it, because I feel like people should really know about it and understand what you're doing.
Well, thank you. Yeah, absolutely. Actually, Adele just wrote a really great article in Arlington Magazine about it, and I love the wine club. So I started it. It'll be just about 2 years. We have about four dozen people. Renee was one of our number one signups. I think Judy was number
two.
Renee's fabulous.
Shocking.
My wine club, first of all, let me just tell you how fabulous my wine club is. Five of the wine club people got together to buy me that large wine fridge there as a thank you for existing.
Oh, my God.
And in the
That's 20, not going to make me cry.
I know. It makes me cry every time. In the 15, almost 20 years I have been in business, I have never had people come to me and say thank you for being here. And we put it in the day after the election, and it was a very emotional time for all of us.
Oh, my God. I can only imagine. But, I had to film a show on that day, too. Yeah. That was tough.
And I started the wine club. It was actually a January, and I went, oh, my God, I've owned restaurants. I've never had a wine bar, and dry January drives me crazy, especially, you know, we have a dry October, but that's a whole other story.
Sobertober.
So, we're doing Come Over October is what we're going to promote with Karen McNeil.
Absolutely.
So I started the wine club, and I thought I wanted to do something that was reasonable. It's still a struggle. It's $48 a month. With now, with everything going on, it's going to go up a little higher. You get 2 bottles of wine a month. But part of what I like to do about it, and my feedback among the people who do it that they really like, is I create the stories around the 2 bottles that they get. Mm. And we talk about it, and we highlight geeky things. So, like, I'll put in, like, geek alert, Sir Lee means this. Or, like, geek alert, an amphora is this. And I talk a little bit about that.
Geek alert for me that one of the wines is from Missouri.
That's right. Right. And we try to bring in wines that people that are drinkable, most of 95% are drinkable now, are wines that are approachable and that people wouldn't normally buy for themselves. Mm. And that's one of the key things. So we may pick a region like the Palmetto Costanza. Mm-hmm. I might taste it somewhere and be like, oh my God, I really want to have this. October is Virginia Wine Month, so we're going to pick 2 wines from Virginia for that.
What are you loving in Virginia these days other than Harborsville?
Well, Glen Manor, of course. Manor. And that was a whole Renee thing. We did a whole episode on Glen Manor. Michael Schaps, who I'm going to go visit at the beginning of October, was spectacular.
Michael Schaps is incredible. Glen Manor's my favorite vineyard.
Yeah.
Linden. Okay. And I've been going there since we found out when we went there, since maybe like 2 years after they opened, and I've been going.
And we just
did every year.
Yeah. We just did a podcast on the Linden Vineyards is really nice. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's
Slater Run is really good.
We're doing a VIP trip with our wine club on Saturday to Slater Run.
Slater Run's great.
Yeah, they are.
Stenson. Have you been to Stenson? Near Crozet. Stenson's great. Another woman winemaker.
Okay.
Really good. Really excellent rosé there. And they have an Arcazzatelli varietal. They do one called the Wildcat. So they do an orange wine, which is really lovely. And it's in Virginia.
Yeah, Virginia wine. We went to an event. We got to taste people that I hadn't tasted in Vaughan, Commonwealth Crush, the neighboring
Commonwealth
one.
Crush and Lightwell Survey are brothers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if you wanted like something really cool and funky, they...
All those words on that, cool and funky.
Cool and funky and all the words were like, they are, I don't want to say mad scientists because they're farmers first. They do all of that. But they love to blend unique things. So, like, he puts Petit Manseng in almost everything, and that's one of my favorite.
And that's a very Virginia thing.
And I mean, like, red wines.
Right.
He's mixing Petit Manseng into red. They're doing all these things. They're big into the
natural,
the hybrids and natural fermentation, natural yeast and things like that, because they're like, we're trying to adapt to climate change in Virginia, and this is one of the ways. Mm-hmm. And it's a co-op, so Commonwealth Crush. Other people can come in and do their wines there.
Yeah.
Oh, it's all cool. The winemaker gets to pick the art. All the labels are incredible. They have art on the labels.
Well, I'll have to check it out.
And Lightwell Survey is the brother that's his own thing that he does, but they're all available right there. And
there's some really, what I think is interesting, because like we were talking about New York wines, right? Mm-hmm. What I think is interesting about Virginia wines, and they're, first of all, I mean, I think there's over 300 vineyards there right now. I mean, it's just amazing all across the region. Is that, listen, 40 years ago, the wines were not great.
No, they weren't.
But that's because, I mean, you know this more than me, vines take time.
Yep. Vines take
time. Vines don't put out the best fruit right away. It takes years of maturation for things
and
to really
knowledge.
Happen. Yes.
And a lot of knowledge.
And there are only so many decisions you can make a year in a vineyard.
Because the Glen Manor had studied over at Linden.
Linden. And, he was the vigneron at, I was
yeah.
the,
yeah. So
at, he was the wine grower at Linden. And then he got to do a Glen Manor label on the Linden label.
And then started.
And then he started his own. He's a fourth generation farmer, first generation winemaker, Jeff White.
So you see, you know, a lot of that has to do with that kind of growth, right? It takes expertise over the years.
Right.
But anyhow, for the wine club, so we do fun stuff. We have a lot of events. So we'll be celebrating October Wine Month. Mm-hmm. I have my cousin coming in to read a smutty vampire book. In December, we do a really fabulous get together, and the wine club members always have like a discounted price or something extra. And then on Fridays, they've all decided that that's when they're all going to come and hang out. So starting like 3 or 4 o'clock, they come in, different people. But what I like about it the most is that it's this range of people from like their mid-20s to like 80 years old. Mm-hmm. And people have gotten to know each other, and they go to parties together, and they become friends.
It's
been really fun. And it's wonderful for me because it challenges me to like be creative and find things. And I think you know Jackie and Mick Nardelli.
Yes.
And you know, Mick's been, God, one of my biggest supporters forever. And I brought him some wine because I hadn't seen him for a while, and he's been a member. And he goes, Zena, he goes, I just love what you're doing. He goes, it doesn't matter what the wine is, I just love that you're doing it. And I thought,
that's so sweet.
It was just like a really nice thing to do. So
And this is really this is the Cheers place, because when we're here and Zena's working with another customer, somebody new comes in.
Oh yeah, it's so funny.
All the wine club were like, can we help you?
Right.
They're like, well, I was looking, we're like, well, the bottle shop's over there, and then here's the boutique. And I said, this is kind of the racy section over here. But what are you looking for? And they're like, well, what are the hours? We're like, well, the hours are, like, we go through the whole thing, and we're like pitching it
all. Isn't that lovely? Yeah. Like, that people love it so much that they feel ownership of it.
Yeah.
Do you know
people,
what I mean?
It's been really wonderful, and we've gotten to be good friends with people, and we now have a wine club toast.
Yes.
From Joel and Jennifer, which is the We Are Not Yet Dead.
Okay.
A Monty Python thing. One.
We're like, which these days, fair.
Okay.
But no, it's a great thing. And when I talk about like having a place that feels like home, where everybody knows your name and you walk in and everybody's like, Renee.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's also when we started the podcast. I came in on a Friday and it was bustling and it was packed in here, and over the din of everything, Zena said, hey, you want to start a podcast? I'm like, sure. And then 2 minutes later, I was like, what's the podcast going to be about?
And then we sat around and we were talking and probably drinking, because that's what we do.
And can I have some bubbles?
Yeah. Yeah. And we started.
While we're creating. We need some inspiration.
No, because when I saw when this first announced that it was opening, and I saw the post and it said Beauty Champagne and Sugar Boutique, and I'm like, those are some of my favorite things in the whole world.
Right?
That's going to be my new favorite place.
And they just slid on in. It was like slide into
the DMs. And
then
we came in and we're like, and now we're going to make it our favorite place, and this is what's going to happen.
And, and a lot of the original people are still members, so it's been... It's been really great.
Amazing.
Which means that I'm going to segue into one of your favorite things.
Hmm.
Because we just started talking brunch. And I would like to mention a little bit about... Well, first of all, we started this conversation because I wanted to talk about how Freddie does his drag brunch on Saturdays. So that I can lead it into the fact that we have Chefs for Equality coming up at the end of October.
Mm-hmm.
And that we're going to be doing the wines for the drag brunch at Perry's.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit, because this is going to come out before... Chefs for Equality.
Yes.
And the excitement about it. It's been something that I've been doing forever. I just think it's so much fun I feel like, when did you start this?
So we started it 13 years ago.
No, I think
The HRC, the Human Rights Campaign, came to David Hagedorn and said marriage equality was not yet legal in the land, but it was up in Maryland. And they said, we really want to do something to throw attention to this. So he called me and our friend Amber Fowle and said, come on, girls, let's do a party. And then 6 weeks later, we did a huge fundraiser for the HRC with 600 people attending at the Ritz-Carlton and every chef of note attending. And it was amazing. And it was like a seven-ring circus. We did like 18 I didn't even know the term activations then. We did 18
Such
activations.
Such a new word, I feel
right?
like.
Like, we had the tables. We had the tasting stations. We had the drag brunch. Like, every year it was like something new. So last year we did a blowout one at the National Building.
So much fun. We drank so much wine with all the coolest people.
We did.
It was great.
I mean, it's 800 people. Yeah. Like, it's amazing.
And it's like all your friends in the back. The best part about it is around the back there, like, we have the women in wine do a lot of the wine stuff, so we all know each other. And then I had brought Andrew over, and oh my God, everybody.
Everybody was there. Like,
Ruth.
Jose came in at the very end. Like, it was insane.
Yeah. It's and you're just sharing at the end. You're just literally, who's got wine open?
Right. People are just pulling glasses off of tables.
So much fun.
It's a little kinky. But anyway, this year, with everything going on, obviously the event needs to happen now more than ever. But because we have been doing it at the Cathedral and we have been doing it at the National Building Museum, we did not feel comfortable doing an event raising funds for the LGBTQIA community and with the HRC. In a federal building. So, because that's where we are.
Yeah.
And we didn't want to do it in a hotel. Great hotels in the city, but the hotels that would accommodate us, it just wasn't a work. And then so we decided to scale back this year. We have a fabulous event place for 2026 that's not yet open. And that is where it'll be next year. This year, we're going to do it different. We thought we were scaling back. We're really not. It's just as extravagant, just different. So on October 27th, mark your calendars, there will be 5 dinners happening around the DMV. Perry's.
Woohoo! It's going to be the drag brunch. You're going.
Bring drag people, brunch.
Get tickets.
And bring dollars to give to the ladies.
Yep.
Yeah. Perry's is doing their drag brunch.
And so that'll be a buffet with great wines and everything. But then we have four other restaurants where multiple chefs are participating. So Cut is participating this year. Wolfgang Puck is
That's
coming into town
be
for it.
Amazing.
There'll be amazing chefs there. Mita is doing an incredible dinner as well. And they have incredible chefs. I don't have the list of chefs with me. Duck and the Peach has 10 chefs.
Oh, wow.
Participating. They're like, we're going to blow this
in
out.
In that space, too.
Yeah. Wow. Well, they have the space, actually. Yeah. And then Moon Rabbit, also incredible chefs. And when you talk about like Michelin stars, James Beard winners, like all the starriest chefs participate. And one of the things I love about the event and I love about being a part of it is that I'm not really good at asking people to do things. It's hard for me.
But we all say yes.
But
when I
call a chef or I call Zena or I call somebody and say, hey, we're doing Chefs for Equality, before I can even do the ask, or like, whatever you need, I got you. Because they understand the cause. And the cause is so important right now. And there's a lot of fear out there with good reason. And to me, now more than ever, we need to make sure that people's marriages are safe.
Yep.
And the trans community is safe and that the drag queens are safe. Like, we need to protect the people that we love. And whether they're your neighbor, your brother, whoever you are, you got to protect the dolls. You got to protect everybody. So anyway, to that point, October 27th, mark your calendars. The information obviously is on the list, areyouonit.com. But you'll be hearing lots about it. You'll see it on all the grams and et cetera.
I'm so excited. Andrew and I are so excited to do the wines. Mm-hmm. We were talking earlier, Nikki, we were telling me, what do you think are the kind of wines we should focus on to make this just into a, because it's going to be a drag brunch at night. Mm-hmm. Buffet style.
Yeah, well, because so Perry's, a 40-year-old restaurant.
Yes, oh God, yeah.
Right, and Adams Morgan, they are the originators in this area of drag brunch. So if you think about it, everybody and their brother does drag brunch, not just locally, but nationally, because it is a moneymaker.
I brought my dad there in the, I think, 90s.
Yeah.
That was a thing.
They've been doing it
for,
I think they've been doing it since the mid-80s. And,
oh my God, I think I might have brought my father from the 80s come to the
I mean, like, they've been doing it. I really do think they're the originators of it. Mm-hmm. And so that was, it was just such a no-brainer. And we called Masako, the chef there, a James Beard Award winner, and Saeed, the owner. And he was like, absolutely. But they were like, but you know, it's a buffet brunch. Like, that's what we do. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, we do. Let's keep it as is. So unlike the other dinners, which will be, you know, five courses and a little fancier, this one's going to be the fun one. And it is going to be price-wise the lower entry. All dinners, the four other dinners will be $400, which I have to be honest is a steal
for what you're going
to get. And and that dinner will be $250.
Oh,
plus,
wow.
Plus, the cool thing about it is you will be getting, when you come in, $25 in funny money. So that you can give singles.
Oh, that's so much fun. I didn't know that.
To the queens. So, because we wanted, in case people didn't know.
Yeah.
You know, and we didn't want to lecture people. So you'll just get the $25. It'll be funny money.
Yeah.
And then the queens will turn it in at the end of the night.
Okay, I love that.
Yeah, I do too.
Love that. So should I be bringing, like, what are we thinking? Like sparkling?
Yes.
Yes.
Always sparkling.
I mean, I feel like a lot of sparkling.
Sparkling,
some white.
I mean, I don't think red is going to be the winner.
I agree with you. Even though it's October, I totally agree with
you. But there's a little bit, maybe. But there are always those who are like, I only drink red wine.
Yeah, I just want to
So,
I need a big cab.
Yes.
You do with brunch, really?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, I think hopefully the people who come are coming with the right intentions and the right understanding, and whatever you're pouring is going to be great.
Yeah.
But bubbles, yes. White and fun.
Yeah.
I would always have a couple of reds just because, like I said,
people
there's always those people who are like, I only drink red wine.
I'm super, super, super looking forward to this. So
be
we
awesome.
Have been doing some really good stuff. I kind of want to lead us towards the end with this question.
Well, let's talk about the wine first.
Oh yeah.
We didn't talk about the wine.
Because
I am sipping it, and it is delicious.
I sipped already straight through it.
You sipped straight through.
Well, it's Thursday.
It's a Thursday. So this is, as they talk about in, this is a Barbersville Nebbiolo. Mm-hmm. And Jefferson's Dream realized in Virginia. Most people know that are in this area that are involved in wine that Jefferson is sort of the founder of American wine, bringing things over.
one on the plus side for him in a very complicated life. But this Nebbiolo is incredible, and I love how they term this. This is the culmination of three worlds. Virginia's terroir. So we have red clay soils, rolling foothills, and balanced climate sometimes. Italy's heritage. So you've got authentic Nebbiolo grapes, and you've got, of course, Luca, a true Piemontese winemaker, Luca Paschina. And then also Jefferson's palate. This is wine is informed by Bordeaux, Champagne, and French refinements. So you have what Italian wines can often feel a little rustic, but this has the elegance of it, of a French wine as well, blended in with Virginia. And it is a perfect combination of all three of those things. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Plus, it's just tasty.
It's just tasty. It's an easy wine. I mean,
And I didn't even know you were an Italian fanatic. When I picked these, I had no idea.
Oh, yeah, no. But it is an easy wine. What's interesting is I think with a Nebbiolo, you know, some reds really, you need to wrap it around something, you know, hefty.
Need some food.
But like, honestly, you could eat this with just some cheese and crackers and be really happy with it. It doesn't need a steak. Like, it's not, do you know what I mean? It's just, I would even eat it with pasta. Pasta.
Absolutely.
You know, like something, like it just, it's
got
holds
some nice
up.
Tannin, it's got something, but it's got fruit. It's just really
And we're just, we. I didn't even put any food in front of us. We're just chatting away and drinking this stuff right now. I mean, I think it's absolutely fabulous.
Renee's had a little bit too much already. She's already she's calling your meds.
She knows. I'm like, I do that all the time. That's my general personality. Like, oh, come on. Okay.
So personality-wise, are you the type of person, and I guess this would depend on whether you're working or you're home, do you like a glass? Are you a flight person or are you a bottle person? I know you mentioned David doesn't drink, but
so
what
I'll
do you
be
like
honest.
To do?
So, based on my experiences with tasting menus, I am a bottle person. I do not go for pairings. I just don't.
You know what you like.
I know what I like, and I'm open, as I've already said, to trying new wines. But I don't necessarily want that with my meal.
Okay.
I don't get the add-on for it. I mean, I certainly love when a wine, when you're like, oh, this wine goes together so well with this, and I get it, and I do enjoy it. But I don't. When I'm spending that kind of money, I just want to drink what I want.
Yeah.
So I totally am a bottle person. I'll be honest. In the house. And I have a fantastic bar and a lovely literal cellar because our house is from the 1870s.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it sounds nice. but
I have a 1934 house. I feel your
okay. Pain. You know what I'm talking about. So I'm very fortunate that we have like a lovely collection. But the only time we open wine in the house or drink in the house is when we have people over.
Oh.
So I don't drink in the house unless we're entertaining. And I do drink when I go out.
There you go.
So that's how it works. I had to find a balance somewhere. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Fair enough. Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I think, I always say that when we talked about this on our podcast before, one of the things that I like to do if I'm going on a date night with Jimmy, inevitably we actually start with a cocktail because I just need that little relax, right? Mm-hmm. Start with, so I'm a rye girl, he's bourbon. Usually start ourselves with a cocktail. And then if it's not a cocktail, it might be a glass of wine, because what I like to do is I need to transition to where I'm at, and then I'll be like, okay, now I'm ready for the bottle.
When you just want a glass
when
of wine?
Just want a glass, right at the end of the day. Because, and I also tell
she
people
cues
like,
that up every time.
Yeah, I do. But I always tell people like, it's okay to start with a glass and then move to the bottle so you know where you're going.
Mm.
Because I think in the beginning, sometimes people get so stressed, they're not sure what they're going to eat, and then the server's right there and they don't know what to do. I was like,
well, then I'm always like, get some bubbles.
Yeah, get
right?
That's the great way to start it.
I'm a bubble girl. Like, I love bubbles. I don't need a celebration. Like, I love bubbles any day of the week. Yeah. And I also will happily start with a rosé.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean,
year-round? Are you a year-round rosé girl?
I'm a year-round rosé girl.
Yeah,
I can't wait to give you this bottle.
Marquette would love her.
Oh, our friend who is a rosé guy, he got he was so upset that we hadn't invited him to do a podcast. We had to do the podcast on rosé with her male friend, Marquette.
Okay.
And
he loves it. Yeah, he's the one that every once in a while I'm like, I had to break up with it for a little while. And he goes, don't do it. Come back. I'm like, that's great.
All right. So just to close out the Chefs for Equality, was there a particular moment in all of those Chefs for Equality that was something unexpected, something memorable, something really important to you? And I mean, that's a lot of years of going on.
Oh, my God. It's so many years. And we've had...
The marriage equality year?
Well, the marriage equality year was amazing.
Yeah, I remember that.
I mean, we have done so many things with that event. And we've raised so much funds and so much awareness. I think for me, the most incredible thing about that event is who comes. And I mean, we're just lucky where we live. I mean, I don't care
we're
what
very
I,
lucky.
I don't
lucky.
Care what you hear about DC.
Yeah.
We are
it's
the DMV.
It's an amazing area.
It's an amazing area filled with incredible people who, and honestly, I'm going to go in a different direction. The chefs and beverage people in this city, they don't just do my event. They do every event.
Yeah.
They are the most charitable. You are the most charitable people. If somebody says, hey, I'm doing a charity, they're like, what can I do? How can I help? The DC hospitality scene understands they understand the assignment. They are the most hospitable people.
We get to see each other when we do it. I think that's one of the reasons
do that. But most people play really well in the sandbox.
I agree with you on that. Yep.
To that point, like at that event, watching chefs who don't know each other cook together, watching people create friendships, the networking that happens, and just the unified joy in being there, and then being at all these other charity events, like helping out. We're just so fortunate we live where we live.
We are very, very fortunate.
I absolutely agree. All right, I think we're ready to wind down. I know this has been a theme throughout this, but you know, it is one of our last two questions. So mm-hmm. Nikki, when you just want a glass of wine, mm-hmm. what are you drinking?
I'm drinking rosé. But I'm also drinking Mount Etna, not the Mount Etna rosé because I haven't had it yet. But if I'm drinking red, I'm drinking Mount Etna.
Okay.
If I just want a glass of wine, I'm drinking rosé from Provence. But if I'm just sitting down before a meal, I definitely want some like Growers Bubbles.
Oh my gosh. Just all those words.
This spirit animal.
I love her. Mm-hmm. Yep. Animal. Absolutely. Renee, are you ready?
Which leads me to my other spirit animal.
Okay.
This is one of the questions that we always ask at the end of this, which is what, Nikki, is your favorite Pink song?
Okay. This one was so easy.
I love that.
Just You and Your Hand Tonight.
Yes. Okay.
Some people have to sing in order to get it.
Feel like that song was written with me in mind.
That is a great song.
I love that
song. I'm not here for your entertainment.
Right.
Exactly. So that's fantastic. And
oh, wait, is that what it's called?
No. That's one of the lyrics in it. You and Your Hand is
the
name of the song.
Is the name of the song?
Okay. Yeah. I didn't look it up.
But I love that line. It's like, I'm not here for your entertainment.
I love that line.
Yeah. It's a great line.
Nobody said that one.
Nobody said
I like.
Am I the first one?
Yes, you absolutely are. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, Nikki wrote back and she's like, I've got an answer for you on that.
Because
we do prep some people.
Okay, so now you guys are going to close out, but I'm going to just say before you close out, first of all, thank you both for having me on this show.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for doing the collab together. Bringing in National Landing is amazing. And this has just been a ton of fun. So I just want
to... I'm sorry for the coughing, but it's been fantastic.
It's
lovely to meet you. Zena's been raving about you. So I'm like...
I've known Nikki a long time.
We know each other.
I had a restaurant down the road from her for a little while. Well, it was a pleasure. And I want to say, Nikki was the one that actually texted me and said, do you want to do a collab? And I texted Renee and went, Nikki wants to do a collab. Nikki wants. And she goes, well, tell me who Nikki is.
Okay, and now I'm going to pretend like I'm not offended, Renee. But go ahead.
She's not in our industry.
I have a day job. That's not that I have to read a lot for.
And she was so excited. So I do want to take 1 second to thank National Landing again. This is definitely a foodie destination. Nikki, you mentioned you've been doing some things down here.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Met Park. We have 23rd Street. We have the water park. It goes all the way to Potomac Yards, where Virginia Tech now is. There are some wonderful things. I like to say even that the Westin Crystal City, where we did our launch for Laurent Perrier, has one of the best and least expensive happy hours in town, if you can believe it.
Okay.
They have llamas at the Peruvian Chicken Place, right?
Also
really good.
Like real llamas?
Yeah, they do. It was like on a Friday night. They bring out llamas and stuff. It's awesome.
Okay.
There's some amazing Mexican places that have opened up here. We just did a happy hour the other day that on my walk back from doing an event over at Amazon, I did a catered event over at their Women in the Legal Department Wild.
Okay.
It was wonderful. So I am very, very thankful. Renee, will you remind everybody where they can follow us? And
please follow, like, and subscribe and follow us on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast, RSS, or follow us on whenyoujustwantaglassofwine.com.
And Nikki, you are Czar?
Okay, first of all, you want to follow me on Instagram at NYCCINELLIS. But you can also tune in to Industry Night Which is its own podcast. And of course, you can see this on YouTube on the Nikki Nellis Industry Night channel. And what else? TheListAreYouOnIt.com. You'll find things just like this, all the events, the membership clubs, things of that nature, and so much more.
Oh, perfect. Cheers, Nikki. Thank you so much for our decade of friendship and for coming and doing this with us.
Thank you for having me.
Cheers, everybody. Well, that was fabulous.
That's fabulous.
I think it's kind of my favorite now.